Hello, I'm Mariet Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to live a happier and healthier life. Thanks for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series which introduces you to wellness professionals, offering their expertise and assistance. Today we're looking at the five sex languages, what you need to know. If you'd like to give and receive more pleasure in your intimate relationship with your partner and strengthen your bond, I'm sure this conversation will be of great value. Please note that this is sensitive content meant for adult listeners. My guest is Dr. Elna Rudolph, sexologist, medical doctor, clinical head of My Sexual Health, and global advocate for sexual health, speaking from Stellenbosch. Welcome, Elna.
Thank you, Mariet. It's great to be with you today.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. After our conversation, it will be fun question time. Elna, what motivates you to work in sexual health, not only with patients, but also as a global advocate for sexual health?
Look, I think I've got the most rewarding job in the whole world, because if you're a doctor and you treat hypertension, for instance, you never see the fact that you've saved the patient's life. But if you save someone's sex life, they really, really feel the benefit of it. That relationship that lost due to the fact that people could get things together in the bedroom again, or that person that missed out on orgasms for years and now that problem has been addressed, really makes a big difference. And these days, as I'm also getting older, I am more and more involved in treating women in their perimenopause and in menopause, and even men also with hormonal problems. And if you sort out a person's hormones, you really put life in their years and not necessarily only years to their lives. Mm. So I really enjoy doing that. From a global perspective, if you look at the Sustainable Development Goals, literally making the world a better place, sexual health plays a massive role in many of the Sustainable Development Goals. And it is extremely important that healthcare providers globally are all sexual health providers, because if you look at things like teenage pregnancy, child marriage, genital mutilation, gender-based violence, all of these really big problems that we have globally, if you have sexual health providers who address that from a rights-based perspective, and if sexual justice is actually a priority for governments, the world is really a better place. So those things that don't move quickly, it takes a long time to steer the ship in the right direction. I enjoy being involved in that.
Elna, do you think there's more openness around the discussion of sexual health, specifically in South Africa?
Yes, I do think that there is more openness. I think that we do have more experts around these days. And when people hear the truth about things, they are more likely to listen. You know, when everything previously, nobody spoke about it, but nobody also really knew about it. And then when things were being said, what was being said didn't really make sense to people. But now, well, there's more and more research about it. We know much more about it. And I do think people talk about it much more openly now.
In September, the World Association for Sexual Health, or WAS, convened the first ever World Sexual Health Assembly in Porto, in Portugal. As the immediate past president of WAS, you were in the midst of the action. What happened there?
Oh, it was a wonderful experience. We basically wanted to mount a response to all that is happening politically in sexual health and rights globally, where we've got such beautiful, hard-won progress that's been made, and now there's regressive policies, and, you know, people's rights are taken away. It's really actually a humanitarian crisis, what's happening. And we didn't only want to say, oh, crisis, what are we going to do? We wanted to say, we have a very strong foundation. There is so much research going on. There's so much amazing work being done in sexual health and rights in many parts of the world. There is still great progress. And how can we get organizations to work together better so that we can work for this common goal of sexual health and rights for all? And we got together the universities where there are strong sexual health programs, the UN agencies, WHO, UNFPA, IPPF, that's a massive service provider of sexual health globally, the professional organizations in our field, and some of the NGOs that work in our field. And we, in one day, built a declaration, the Porto Declaration, to say that this is the premise, these are the guiding principles, and these are the key priorities that we will be pushing for. In every year, there's the World Health Assembly, but the sexual health agenda isn't very strong there because of the conservative member states that associate with the UN, you know. And it's important that somewhere outside of that, there's very strong agenda setting in sexual health. And yes, that's basically what we did together. 30 people were in one room, and all the nerds that are super interested in this field came together and worked together. And this will be the start of a movement that will continue going forward. Next year, we will meet in Nairobi.
That's excellent news. On a slightly different topic, you once said that part of what makes you a good sexologist is your ability to communicate effectively. Now, we often hear that effective communication can make or break a romantic relationship. But I think for many people, knowing how to communicate when it comes to sex isn't that easy. Why is this?
We just feel awkward, and it is such a vulnerable thing to communicate about. We feel extremely exposed and vulnerable, and we realize that our partners also do. And then, you know, the more awkward you are when you talk about something, the more awkward you come across as well, and that makes the other person awkward. Mm. And it's not necessary that it is like that, but unfortunately, it is like that for most people. And then also, what often happens is, in the beginning, you don't talk about something because often sex in the beginning of relationships is just great and there's not much to talk about. But then as problems start to arise, you feel too bad to talk about it. And now it's been years that something has happened in a certain way. And then to now put it on the table is much more uncomfortable. So the sooner people learn, well, I think you should be able to communicate about sex very, very well even before you start having sex, which is not what typically happens. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think people can learn to communicate about sex much better.
The other thing is that when we don't communicate effectively, it's difficult to have our needs met. And this brings us to our topic, the 5 sex languages. If I understand correctly, not everyone wants and desires sex in the same way. Could you explain what a sex language is?
Most people know about the love languages. And if they have already read the love language book, or they have maybe done a course or heard about it, at least I hook it on with the love languages. So I like, when I do a talk about this, I like to ask if there's someone in the room that maybe speaks a different language. And there usually is. At the last talk, there was someone that spoke Hungarian. And I asked them to say something to me in Hungarian. And, you know, usually whatever the person is saying is something kind and maybe a little bit funny or just information about them. But then I ask the audience, what did this person say? And there's no way of knowing what that person said if you didn't speak that language. And what we do in more than 98% of cases is we choose a partner that really speaks a completely different language. And if you insist on only communicating with your partner in your own language, but you know that your partner doesn't speak that language, your partner might get a sense that what you are doing is maybe not too hostile, or even that you are trying to be kind or funny or loving, but they literally do not understand what you are saying. And they feel like their primary needs are not being met because you are not communicating with them effectively. And the same with you. If your language is also different from your partner's, and you must do the, you must make an effort to make sure that you communicate in a language that they can understand. So the love languages are quality time, words of affirmation, acts of service, physical touch, and gifts. And if you are, for instance, a words of affirmation person, you will be giving your partner compliments every day, telling them how wonderful they are. But they might be a quality time person, for instance, and you don't need to spend time with someone to know that they love you. You just need to hear from them that they love you, that they think that you are great, that they appreciate you. But the other person needs the time. So now you give the person 10 compliments a day, but zero of your time. They feel deprived. They want to spend time with you, but they don't give you compliments, and therefore you feel deprived. So it's like that in all relationships. It's very rare that people actually choose a partner with the exact same love language. And then sex languages are similar. We have a way that we want to, or our need in sex is met in a certain way. And what we want out of it, if I'm going to ask you, did you have good sex? What will make that sex good for you and for me will be different. And again, you choose a partner that there's different things that they want to get out of sex that makes it good for them. And if you don't focus on providing your partner with those specific things that they want, essentially speaking their language, what often happens is the couple has sex. There is some sex in a relationship, whether it is once or twice a week or once or twice a month, but both are unsatisfied because the sex that they have do not meet their primary needs.
Where does the concept of the sex languages come from?
So there's a guy that wrote the book called Doug Weiss, an American psychologist. And the one that I follow is based on his book. I heard a podcast from him, and it was fascinating because I had then already been a sexologist for the best part of 15 years, and I've never heard that take on it. And since I've started to use this in my practice and explain this to patients, it is as if a new dimension opened, because people find, oh, okay, wow, amazing. Now you understand me, you really get me, and the sex that I'm getting from this is so much better. You know, people, you spoke earlier about communicating about having your own needs met. The thing is, if you don't have a framework to understand what your needs are, it's very difficult to communicate them. You just feel like, I'm not happy, but just saying I'm not happy doesn't really help you at all. You might not know what it is that you want. And I feel like giving patients this framework makes it so much easier for them to verbalize what their needs are, and then for the other person to understand it and provide for those needs.
Yes, I think most of the listeners like me now would like to know what these languages are, and if you could please explain each of the five.
Okay. So the first type is the desire type. And the desire type needs to feel, they feel most connected when they sense that they are deeply wanted, pursued, and sexually desired, like in their partner lusts after them. They like it if their partner flirts with them, and if they have a sense that there is a sexual longing that makes them feel very powerful. So what you can say if your partner is the desire type is to initiate sex would be something like, I've been thinking about you all day. I want you now. I can't resist you tonight. Can we be together? So there's this idea that there is a physical desire for them. And during sex, you can say, I wanted you so much before you even touched me. You drive me wild. I need more of you. Okay. And then after sex, you can say, I hope you felt how much I wanted you. Being with you tonight felt like exactly what I needed. So typically the desire type is paired with someone who feels like they are objectified if someone wants their body that much, you know. So you have to be quite careful if you are the desire type yourself, but your partner is not the desire type at all. That's what you need. You want to feel that your partner really wants you. And I see that in my practice very often when someone comes in with a so-called low libido. We don't like to call it that anymore. We talk about a desire discrepancy in a relationship. But it is usually because the high desire partner is this type. They want to see in their partners that they actually become sexually aroused and need them physically. And then the other person just never reach that level. They don't. It's not what they want and what they need. They don't have spontaneous sexual desire, and it can cause a lot of distress for the desire type. But even if you're not the desire type, just communicating with your partner in this way that I've suggested now really can make a massive difference for the partner to feel actually desired. So the next type is the fun or playful type. So they crave spontaneity, adventure, novelty, play, and humor in their sexual expression. And they get aroused when sex feels light and playful and unexpected or creative. So what you can say to them to initiate sex is, let's sneak away somewhere new tonight and see what happens. I have a wild idea. Do you want to try it? So they don't want routine and monotony when it comes to sex at all. They want something that is unexpected, and they want to be surprised during sex, and they want to feel like you're playing with them and that it is fun while you are doing it. And afterwards, they want to hear that it was fun and that you loved it and that you were so excited about that. And the novelty and the playfulness of the moment meant a lot to you as well. And this type can also giggle and laugh during sex. And if you are not this type and your partner wants to giggle and laugh during sex, you might feel like they are being childish and it might be a turn off for you. But if you understand that, and I mean, sex should be fun and it should be playful and pleasurable. So it's completely understandable that people are like this, but they are usually partnered with someone that wants to be a bit more serious during sex. And then it can feel like you are missing each other completely. The third type is the pleasure type. So what they want is to emphasize the sensory experience of pleasure during sex. I mean, everybody wants pleasure from sex, but for this type, it is very much about the exploration and to maximize the physical pleasure. So they want to draw attention to what feels good and discover the most pleasurable way of, you know, reaching that orgasm, or maybe multiple orgasms, or what route can you take to get there that will make it even more incredible. And they will try out various techniques to increase the pleasure. So what you can say to them to initiate sex would be something like, let's explore what feels amazing tonight. I want to learn what you like. I want to take my time to discover every pleasure point with you. So you need to show that person that their pleasure is a real priority to you. And you want to communicate very well with them as well and ask for feedback during sex. You know, do you want more of this? Do you want more of that? Harder, softer, deeper. They want that communication. Feedback means a lot to them. And what you want to say to them after sex is that you loved exploring their body. You loved what they did. The pleasure that you experienced was unforgettable. Focus on the sensations, the particular sensations that they made you experience. That worked very well for the pleasure type. Then you get the patient or time type. And this type often really correlates well with quality time love language as well. So for them, they need time and gentleness and emotional safety in order to be sexual with a partner. They don't want to rush. They don't want to know that, oh, because you are feeling sexually aroused, you want my body kind of thing. That's the last thing that they want. They want to know that you have open space in your diary for them, that you are available that you are going to not rush through this. And they wanted to be tender and respectful with a long build up, and they won't be able to have sex if there isn't a proper emotional connection. You know, they're not the type that want to do makeup sex after a fight or something like this, and they don't want to feel pressure to get sex. You know, if they, like this other partner that might feel like, ooh, I just need a release now, might make this partner feel very, very threatened because they feel pressure to have the sex, and that's not what they like. They want to hear, I'd love to take our time tonight, no rush. Let's begin slow with touch and closeness, and then we just see where we go, kind of thing. They want to feel like they can set the pace and that you will just follow, that you won't push them too fast in any particular direction. And what they really appreciate to hear afterwards are things like that they loved how gentle it was, and the presence that you experienced together, as opposed to, you know, this multiple orgasm or something like that. The penetration part of the sex is definitely not what they are after, but more that you spend time with them. And then lastly, it is the acceptance or celebration type. So for them, it's important to feel wholly accepted and celebrated and adored, not just for their bodies, but for who they are as a person. And they feel aroused when their partner affirms them and cherishes them and honors them emotionally and physically. And they want to hear that you want every part of them and that you love every part of them, the mother, the wife, you know, on every level, you are adorable to them. It's not only physically, and beautiful inside and outside kind of thing. And something very good to say to this type is something like, every curve of you is perfect to me. I celebrate you, your body, your heart, your soul, you know, nice affirming kind of statements like that, which also correlates well with the words of affirmation, our love language. And after sex, you can say, I love you exactly the way you are, and you deserve all the love and the pleasure in the world. Look, I think most people would love to be made love to like this. And I think that most couples can get to a place to have such tender kind of engagement. But the reality of day-to-day sex is that it's much more rushed, and people do it for their own pleasure much more than focusing on their partner's acceptance and celebration during the sex. But for this type, if you are this type, other kinds of sex just feels empty to you because you need really feeling treasured to be able to enjoy the sex. So if you now think of these five types, I'll just review them quickly again. The desire type, that wants to be physically desired. The fun or playful type. The pleasure type, that is very much focused on the orgasms and how to get there and who's having how much pleasure during sex. The time or patience type. And then the acceptance or celebration type. If you've listened to this podcast now, you will get an idea of which one of these you are yourself, and then also which one your partner might be. And you know, I think people change over time, and couples change, and what you loved yesterday, you might not love today, which is also perfectly fine. But typically, people can identify more or less which one they are and their partner is. And then you can focus much better on how you can make sure that you communicate in that language to your partner.
I was wondering, Elna, if people sometimes have more than one dominant sex language.
Yes, many people. I must say, most of my patients, when I talk to them about this, will be able to highlight too. And I think all of us do have the ability to actually enjoy all kinds of sex. We do, you know. It's not like if you like this, you will hate other kinds of sex, but it is just the mother tongue, the one that sits just most comfortably, is probably one of them.
A quick note on what I do. I showcase health and wellness experts or individuals using their creativity to bring about transformation. By using my background in journalism and podcast production and my media network. Spotlighting therapists, coaches, and other professionals not only expands their client base, but positions them as trusted voices in wellness and boosts the sales of books, courses, and other offerings. On the other hand, the podcasts and articles I create provide readers and listeners with an ever-expanding resource on living a healthier, happier, and more productive life. It also introduces them to helping professionals they can trust to support them in their wellness journey. If you're a wellness expert keen on expanding your reach and credibility, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under services on my website, marietsneyman.co.za. I work closely with my weekly podcast guests and the professionals I interview for articles, offering step-by-step support. I especially enjoy assisting first-time podcast guests. Now, back to my current guest. If someone is listening and they're not quite sure about their partner's sex language, what would your advice be?
I think find these resources of DuckWise, and you can share it in the text related to your podcast with them, and read the book, because he wrote a whole book about it, and I think it's really worth investing in that in your relationship.
I also saw that in his book, Five Sex Languages, Dr. Doug Weiss mentions roadblocks such as sexual abuse, sex addiction, or intimacy anorexia that could be blocking pleasure. What is intimacy anorexia?
So it's not a term that's defined in the DSM-5, for instance, or, the ICD-10 codes that we typically use when we define sexual or mental health problems. But they often talk about intimacy anorexia actually in terms of almost like sex addiction, but on the other side of the spectrum of sex addiction. Not that we talk about sex addiction anymore. Actually, we talk more about out-of-control sexual behavior or sexual compulsive behavior. So it would relate to something like withholding. If you think of what anorexia is, it is an extreme form of controlling what you are taking in. And the intimacy anorexia relates to an extreme form of controlling your own protection against vulnerability to become intimate. And that you actually almost boycott yourself in not allowing yourself to go far enough to be intimate with a person. And that often has to do with things that actually have nothing to do with sex itself. You know, it is a trauma that happened in that person's life at some point that is resulting in them having to protect themselves at all costs against the vulnerability of intimacy. And it doesn't help if you address that thing with trying to get the people to have sex more regularly. You have to address that primary trauma.
Now, back to your work, Elda. Could you explain how you approach a couple or a person, say a couple that comes to you for help? Clearly, you don't just look at the physical side.
Yes. Yeah, so if someone comes to me, it is because they thought that there might be a physical aspect to what's happening. You know, we are a big team. There are 50 people on our team. They could have gone to one of the psychologists, but they chose to come to me. So I will always look for medical reasons for their sexual dysfunction and always make sure that I correct the hormones, that I make that they are not on medication that's particularly bad for sex. Of course, the chronic conditions need to be treated and controlled, but if you can change some of the drugs, it often helps, or if you can better control some of the chronic conditions, it also helps. And I think it is just so much easier for a person to deal with psychological stuff or relationship stuff if all of the physical boxes have been ticked. Because if you just go for psychotherapy, but in the meantime, you're on the wrong medication or your hormones aren't right, it can make it so much more difficult on your journey. So people often start with the medical stuff. And yes, as a doctor, I first tick the medical boxes. But then I go over to try and figure out what's really going on in that person's or those people's life. And it is a bit of a trick, you know, in a like often a half an hour consultation to get a grip of what's going on medically and then to start figuring out what's actually happening between them. What I often would do is to get them started with centered focus therapy. And I've got a link on YouTube that explains how you do centered focus. So if there wasn't time during the consultation to do that, I'll let them get started with that. And then we book a separate follow-up where we talk just about how it went with the centered focus. And then I can start to get a better idea of what's actually happening in the couple. Often, if they come in there primarily with low libido, I will quickly explain these sex languages to them, because any sexual health consultation works on a little model called PLICIT. It's permission. You first establish that there is permission to talk about sex, and then you give limited information. So this is what I then, the limited information is basically sharing with them the information about these sex languages, and then specific suggestions. So that would be, oh, okay, so if your partner is the desired type and you are actually the celebration type, I suggest that you do ABC, you know, whatever works in that situation. And then intensive therapy would then be for those roadblock kind of situations where there was sexual abuse, where there is something serious going on in the relationship. These people aren't having sex because they really resent each other, not just because there is something small that we can address through sex counseling. I will then refer for intensive therapy, or theoretically, like giving hormones or something like that is also seen as intensive therapy.
Thank you. Could you perhaps first talk about your practice, where it is situated, and then maybe you'd like to talk about my sexual health? You've mentioned that there are 50 people involved.
Yes, so my practice is in Stellenbosch, and it is on the R44 just as you leave Stellenbosch towards Somerset West. I love my little practice there. It is a very nice private kind of space where, you know, it's not like it's in a big medical center where there's other people as well. So it is quite discreet to go there. And I do everything from pap smears and hormones and sexually transmitted infections to low libido and erectile dysfunction and anorgasmia and premature ejaculation and transgender or gender diverse care. And did I say menopause, a lot of menopause or a low testosterone in older men? Anything related to your sexual health is what I see in my practice. And my sexual health is our clinical group. We relate together in the form of a virtual multidisciplinary team. So everyone doesn't come and work there at the practice. They all work in their own practices. But once a month, we have a team meeting. We have lots of training opportunities. We offer clinical supervision. And then most importantly, we offer accreditation. So if you're looking for a credible sexual health provider and you find someone on the My Sexual Health website, you can know that this person has had adequate training. They are really dedicated towards delivering evidence-based care, and they're constantly working under supervision and making sure that they stay up to date with the latest. So it's a safe provider to see, because unfortunately there are many people, not only in South Africa, globally, who are interested in sex, who did some 2-week online course or even a year course somewhere, but they don't have primary training as a healthcare provider. They don't abide by the ethical principles of their local bodies all the international ethical principles that we have at WAS, and then you're not safe there. You know, it's very important when you share with a person something that leaves you so vulnerable that it is really a trained professional. So, yeah, we provide that service at My Sexual Health.
And your colleagues at My Sexual Health are in different centres, not so?
Yes, all over the country. And there are even people globally that had some connection with South Africa at some point, and they still relate with us as a team.
I'd also like you to talk a little about the global learning platform you have that offers CPD accredited education in sexual wellness.
Yes, so Sexology Courses is a platform that we host different kinds of training programs on. You can just, for instance, if you have an interest in sexual pain, you can do the sexual pain course. Or if you want to get a bit more of a comprehensive overview of sexual health, you can do what we call the MAPS course, where there are various different sexual health courses that amount to about 60 different CPD points, continuous professional development points. So at the end of this, and then if you have submitted workbooks and if you've done some supervision and that, we offer accreditation so that you can then say, I am now an accredited sexual health provider. It's not a formal qualification. It is just a process through which you can tell the people in your community that you do take your training in sexual health serious and that you are a credible provider.
And then, which is more for listeners in general, I would think, could you talk about your MSH, your My Sexual Health online shop?
So when I started working in sexual health, I saw that there is a need for curated sexual health products, you know, because I would see a patient and they need a specific silicone lube that comes from Germany, and they need vaginal dilators for sexual pain, and they need this kind of a moisturizer for their vagina because they can't use hormones and they might not be interested in a small vibrator. And I had to send them to four different places to go and get all of that. And then they would come back and, of course, didn't have the motivation to go and look for all of those different products. So I started putting together this curated range of sexual health products, which we sell online on the My Sexual Health website. And I think it is, well, I know that it renders a service to the public to know that there's a place. I mean, you can find other websites where you can buy many more very interesting, pleasure-enhancing, dress-up and all kinds of whips and chains and stuff, which is not what we sell at My Sexual Health. It is really delivering a service where your primary sexual health needs are met with excellent quality products.
I'd like to know where listeners can learn more about your work or follow you, and perhaps you can also tell us whether you work online.
Yes, I definitely work online. So if you go to mysexualhealth.co.za, you'll find our contact details there. You can phone or WhatsApp Leslie Ann. She's the receptionist there, and you can or send an email, and she will be able to hook you up with an appointment with me or with one of our other providers. And you can follow us at My Sexual Health on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm at Dr. Alna Rudolph on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Thank you. I'll attach the link to your website to the podcast, and all the other things you mentioned will be included in the podcast notes.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Before you go, Alna, may I ask you a fun question?
You're welcome.
Okay. What quirky ice cream flavor would best describe your personality?
I just wanted to say strawberry, but if it's not quirky.
You may have strawberry.
It is just, I actually want to convey the idea that I am trusted. And I think that's why I went for strawberry. Mm. Because when it comes to sexual health, it's extremely important to get your information from so-called trusted sources. Now, the problem with trusted is that the people that you typically trust, the church, the school teacher, your friends, talk a lot of nonsense about sex. They don't have academic knowledge about it, you know. They try their best. They've got good intentions. And like most of the spiritual principles, for instance, around sexuality is actually quite sound, but there is just a lack of knowledge. But if you have a trusted source that is actually well-informed, it makes a big difference, because if you have good knowledge, it brings better outcomes on many different levels. So I think that's a long story to say I'll go for just something like Strawberry, that's a trusted brand, so that you know you can trust what you hear from me.
Yes, and I've known you for decades, Elna, and I'd like to say that you are like strawberries. You are fresh, and one knows where you come from, and what you see is what you get.
Okay, cool. Thanks. I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for spending time with us and introducing us to the 5-6 languages. And I'd like to add that I have a lot of respect for your decades of devotion to normalizing conversations on sexual health.
Oh, thank you, Marie. Thank you for your devotion to helping people. It makes a big difference in the world.
I appreciate that. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. If you found this episode insightful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear, and Helpful, is produced by me, with original music by Mark Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.